én kofferidem és ne zsáj. Lepáté samostám, mi van tiszte dolgok, vechodníke, ne. Tom, dolgok, szavrát, a patrőr, ne. Én ezt perintem, tam, frem, a patrőr, ne. Patrőr, dolgok, zagledam, Madonna, en ošvan.
Riz.
Je bil pa lep, mlad, mlad in to je siv, siv, ne ta nemški občaj, črn pa to ne, prav tista prava volk, krasen.
Radijske zgodbe o ljudih, ki ustvarjajo duh časa, na Radiju Študent.
Objava dokumentov CIA o vpletenosti v državni udar v Iranu leta 1953. Devetnajstega avgusta je minilo natanko 60 let od državnega udara v Iranu, ki je z oblasti odnesel takratnega demokratično izvoljenega premijeja Mohameda Mosadeka. Njegovemu strmoglavljenju je sledila 26-letna avtoritarna vladavina pod vodstvom šaha Mohameda Reze Pahlavija, ki je bil dosti bolj pogodu z Združenim državam Amerike in Veliki Britaniji, predvsem pa njihovim interesom po iranskem naftnem bogatstvu. Prav na letošnjo 60. obletnico teh dogodkov je Državni varnostni arhiv Univerze Georgia Washingtona objavil dokumente ameriške obveščevalne agencije CIA, s katerih je bila umaknjena oznaka tajnosti. Vloga Združenih držav Amerike, še posebej pa CIA, v strmoglavljanju iranskega premijeja Mosadeka je sicer že dolgo časa nekakšna javna skrivnost. Mosadek je bil močan trn v peti zahodnim naftnim korporacijam, saj je leta 1951 po svoji izvolitvi na čelo vlade predlagal zakon o nacionalizaciji iranske nafte, ki je bil v parlamentu tudi sprejet z veliko večino. Tudi brez nedavno objavljenih internih dokumentov CIA obstaja veliko dokazov o vodilni vlogi agencije pri načrtovanju, izvedbi in financiranju operacije za odstavitev Mosadeka. Prav dogodki povezani z državnim udarom leta 1953 ostajajo eden glavnih vzrokov nezaupanja in napetosti med Zahodom in Iranom, ki se danes manifestirajo tudi na številnih drugih področjih. Kaj novega nam torej lahko razkrijejo objavljeni dokumenti in kakšen pomen nosi končno uradno priznanje strani CIA o njeni vpletenosti v dogodke pred 60 leti? O tem smo se pogovarjali z Malcolmom Burnom, namestnikom direktorja Državnega varnostnega arhiva, kjer so dokumente objavili. Burn je vse skozi sodeloval pri pravnih bitkah za deklasifikacijo tajnih oznak s CIA-inih dokumentov o Iranu in je tudi soavtor knjige o Mohamedu Mosadeku in njegovemu strmoglavljenju leta 1953.
It's significant in a particular way and it has to do with issues that aren't related to Iran but are very much related to the CIA. My organization, which is based at George Washington University, it has as part of its mission to try to press our government to become more open with important historical records. There is a history, of course, with every government, including our own, of wanting to hold on to information and to keep it secret. And, of course, there are very important reasons why certain materials should be made available so that the public can understand its own history. And we have done this kind of thing for many years and broken loose a great deal of very important materials. And this is a case, the 1953 coup, where it's simply been ridiculous that that agency has refused to acknowledge its role for now 60 years actually 58 years. They made this announcement a little while ago. So it's a big deal from that point of view, from the point of view of openness and transparency. It is, as you suggest, not anything new substantively in terms of our understanding of the coup itself in Iran.
Can we find in this document something new, especially on methods that the CIA used in this operation?
Yes, absolutely. A lot of the attention that these documents have received center around one or two small sentences in one of the documents that was released that specifically say the CIA was involved. But there were a number of other documents released, and those are quite interesting from a historian's point of view. They may not change our picture of the coup in a very fundamental way, but it is quite fascinating to read reports, basically daily reports, from the chief CIA overseer of the coup, a man named Kermit Roosevelt, who was a relation of two different American presidents and who was the CIA's chief operations officer dealing with the Middle East. And the reports that, some of which were declassified at the same time, give you a great picture of kind of the atmosphere that was in place in Tehran at that time. And as the CIA was trying to work with different sectors of Iranian society, the military, the police, the parliament, even the clerics, the mullahs, trying to put the pieces together for this coup plan that they had been working on for some months. So there is a lot there that that gives you some insight into their operations.
Personally, I was very impressed by CIA's focus on propaganda to oust then Prime Minister Mohammad Mossadegh. Can you explain some of these methods, for example?
Sure. This was a very important part of the plan, and it built on a previous operation that was already in place. The CIA, as you know, and I'm sure all intelligence agencies do the same, but they had a code name for their operation. So the coup went under the code name TP Ajax, TP being a code for the country of Iran. Well, already in place was an operation called TP Bidam, and that centered around a propaganda effort first focusing on the Soviets and the communists, where CIA and their agents would plant false stories and other accounts into the Iranian media. They even wrote a book that they claimed was written by somebody else, all of which, of course, was meant to make the Soviets and the communists look terrible, to undercut support for them in society. Well, sometime in either late 1952 or more likely early 1953, the focus of TP Bidam shifted from the Soviets and communists to Mossadegh. And the goal was to undermine the prime minister in the same way. And so they began to produce materials of a similar nature that did all kinds of things to try to make Mossadegh look unappealing, to claim that he was communist, to claim that he did not
have
the interest.
He was a Jew and so on, yeah.
He was a Jew, he was a homosexual, he was all kinds of things, whatever they could think of that would make him look bad to the audience.
Yeah, but basically, in all of this, we can find footprints of CIA.
Oh, sure. Now, what's difficult is to understand what was CIA and what was local, because they were trying to build on some existing feelings within society, and so it's a little hard to tell. But in our posting, as I know you saw, there were a couple of examples of this propaganda that I agree with you were quite fascinating to look at. Now, I had an interview several years ago with another CIA agent who is no longer living, who said a fascinating thing. He worked on propaganda and some of these other covert operations and was involved in Iran and then later involved in attempts to undercut the government in Syria and so on. He said, with a smile on his face that there was an interesting development that occurred, which was that while he and his colleagues were putting together all of this propaganda, his associates who were working in CIA but working on analysis, they were not covert operatives, they were analysts, they were reading the Iranian media and putting together reports based on the articles they were seeing in that media, which this person knew were placed by the CIA. And so he said it was a very odd situation to be watching his colleagues form opinions about the state of politics in Iran based on false material that he knew that he and his other colleagues had planted. But he said he couldn't say anything to them because they were not authorized to share that information.
Are there any references in documents about official U.S. government stand on this operation?
About the official U.S. government stand?
Yes.
Well, there are probably some references in one of the histories, you know, the long documents that a historian put together who worked for the CIA as an exercise to explain the operation to other CIA people. But otherwise, not really. I mean, these are mostly kind of daily operational materials that are part of the nuts and bolts, as we say, of putting together the plot itself. Mm-hmm. Now there are, let me just add that there are other materials that we already had, some of them officially released, but one of the key documents in particular was not officially released. It was another internal history written in 1954 by Donald Wilbur, who was one of the main architects of the coup plan. And my organization tried to get that document declassified officially through the Freedom of Information Act, and we even went to court to try to force its release, but we were not successful because the CIA refused. And within weeks of that decision, somebody from inside the CIA leaked a copy of the document to the New York Times, which published the whole thing, and as a sideline, completely defeated the efforts of the CIA to keep it secret. It's one of the arguments that my organization has with this kind of reaction. But be that as it may, the result is that we have one of the most important documents now publicly available, which does go into some of the official U.S. policy, but also into a great deal of detail about the plan itself.
Sing, bitch. If I don't have a mag, I get a bastard stab with a knife big as a claw from an Alaskan crab. Young, I'm down with Vinny, give me 6 weeks. All your little pipsqueaks is up Shit's Creek. Think we a joke? I put three in your throat. Drunk off gin and CNC coke, then we flee in a boat. Then I come open up the spot with coconuts and rocks, so the hoes will suck some cock. Then I forget to call after I know I get attention deficit disorder. 1-5, catch us off X's and dust. Whole clique of registered sex offenders. Pop shit, we'll hold your funeral. XVs, niggas money come in Roman numerals. Your block slow now, she fuck with them rappers, cause y'all niggas money took a muscle relaxer.
I'm the mastermind with a faster rhyme. It's work, not how I pass the time. I'm the mastermind with a faster rhyme. It's work, not how I pass the time. I'm the mastermind with a faster rhyme. It's work, not how I pass the time. I'm the mastermind with a faster rhyme. It's work, not how I pass the time.
I'm music strong enough to stop a bomb. I'm putting pressure on you kids like I'm a soccer mom. Who you think I dig it at? It was to stop Saddam. Who you think I dig it at? It was to drop the bomb. You get your shit rock, mine, like Mustafa Song. You blowin' smoke, you motherfucker, you should cop a bomb. The 9 Taurus jam a little bit, the Glock is strong. I move brutal and use voodoo like Papa Shang. Over a billion Muslims, you can never stop as long. Over a billion bullets shooting from the chopper's arm. The backstage filled with liquor and a lot of trauma, cause it's been hard on Vinny since my father gone. I'm about to blow the fucking horns like it was Rosh Hashan. This is the calm before the storm, Armageddon dawn. Carry your motherfucker head that I shred and on. I speak literally, figuratively, the prophet gone.
I'm the mastermind with a faster rhyme. It's work, not how I pass
faster rhyme. It's work, not how I pass the time.
You don't have to search and question. I have the purse and the murder weapon. Never get a second chance to make a first impression. I'm no virgin to murder and I'm an urban legend. Rather be a real service than a servant heaven. I don't like cops, I don't like cooperators. I don't like traitors and story corroborators. In any problem I'm the common denominator. My behavior is the product of intoxicators. I'm just blood addicted, it's the other liquid. I'm above the limit, off of the blood of the wicked. Don't even ask, there's somebody in the body bags. The blood matches, it's on the hatches and hockey masks. I'm never traumatized, I don't have to compromise. I don't have to economize the homicides. You tell Jesus to take the wheel, my faith is nil. I believe that even Jesus has a way to kill.
V drugem delu pogovora z Malcolmom Burnom bomo slišali še nekaj zanimivih stvari v zvezi z dogodki leta 1953, predvsem v zgodovinskem in političnem kontekstu. Burn nam bo tudi pojasnil, kako je potekal sam proces za odstranitev oznake tajnosti iz CIA-jih dokumentov in kako deluje oziroma s katerimi projekti se še ukvarja državni varnostni arhiv.
1953 events are seen as a major source of tensions even today between Iran and Western nations, especially United States. You also co-authored a book on this subject. Are there, from historical perspective, still any uncertainties about how events of 1953 developed and who were major actors?
Yes, absolutely. There's a very lively debate, both political and academic, about all of these questions. It's amazing that 60 years later there is so much disagreement. The reaction to these documents is one indication of how alive this issue is. It's been an enormous reaction. And among, you know, on the internet, on the blogs and so forth, where different scholars interact, there has been quite a bit of discussion about what this means and does it change our views at all or not. And the discussions are often very emotional because different scholars and others have very emotional views about what it means to say either that the United States was responsible or that Iranians were responsible. All of these variations carry different implications for all kinds of things. One of the key areas where it would be great to get more information is about the British role. And part of our posting highlights a controversy that is still ongoing in terms of historiography, where the British are not quite where the CIA is yet. They are still refusing to acknowledge their role, and this is having an effect on the ability of our State Department to publish its own official history of that period, which is required by law to be thorough, complete, and reliable. And it has been an ongoing controversy because to date we do not have a full history that includes acknowledgement of both the CIA and British roles.
And also probably interesting is the role of oil companies' interests in this coup, yeah?
Yes, I do, and that is another point of contention. I think there is no doubt, there cannot be any doubt whatsoever, that the whole reason why Iran is of any interest is primarily because of oil. Secondarily, because of its shared border with the former Soviet Union. That's, of course, less of interest now. But the big question is how you define what the importance of oil was. Was it commercially important? Was it a matter of American officials hoping to enrich companies like Standard Oil of New Jersey, this kind of thing? Or was it important because of strategic reasons, because oil is simply a vital resource that the West needed to keep its economies strong and to resist Soviet activities. And my own view is the latter, that it was primarily strategically important, although, of course, the oil companies had some influence in Washington. as they always have. So it's one of these areas where there's an intersection, but it's still an ongoing subject of academic debate.
President Obama acknowledged U.S. involvement in Iran, but failed to apologize to Iranian nation. You think apology would be appropriate?
That's a political question. I would love to sidestep that. I'm interested in how his government responds now to the new Rouhani government and whether or not the big flap that has occurred over these documents is something that they can take advantage of. Because as I understand it, in Iran there is some expectation now based on the sense that there is a new, attitude in the U.S. government. I'm not sure that's an accurate portrayal, but there may be some way for the two sides to build on this.
Can we say that the 1953 coup in Iran marked the beginning of CIA's many subsequent covert operations abroad with aim to topple foreign governments that weren't subservient to U.S. interests during the Cold War?
Well, I suppose so. It was not the very first operation that the CIA undertook, but the earlier ones were more related to elections in places like Italy and France. So this was probably the first big operation with that particular goal in mind, and it certainly was seen as a big success and viewed as a potential model for future operations. Now, ironically, the same Kermit Roosevelt who oversaw the operation in Iran was asked, according to his record of things, asked by the government to take part in the Guatemala operation the next year in 1954 and later the Bay of Pigs in 1961, and he allegedly refused because he said that the conditions are very different and he was not so confident. So this also gets to the question of who the CIA is and why do they keep this information secret, and maybe there's even a theory that they like to keep some mystery attached to all of this because it makes them appear like a more powerful entity when in fact they are just as disorganized as any government agency is.
Yes, interesting. You participated in this quite long process to declassify and publish these CIA's documents. What obstacles and oppositions you faced in this process, and how long did it take?
Well, it took a long time. It took 11 years for this request to be fulfilled. That is unfortunately not a unique experience. We have lots of problems with the Freedom of Information Act in the U.S., but I have to say that it does produce a great many extremely important results, and it can work very well if you have the patience for it. I think the problems that we face are those of dealing with any intelligence agency. It is the opposite of their mission to allow this kind of information out. Their whole purpose is to keep things secret because they do not want the opposition to have any inkling of what it is they do, how they go about their job, where their strengths are, where their weaknesses are. This is an understandable kind of an attitude, but our position is that they are not the only point of view that matters, that there are many consequences to that kind of conduct that affect society at large. And so there has to be a larger discussion about where the priorities are and under what circumstances is it legitimate to keep this information secret, and when should it be made available because of larger social and public interests. So there are institutional and political considerations that come into play. It's a constant fight, as I'm sure you know, in your country and elsewhere. It's part of the way of life here.
Can you please finish by introducing some other projects that your organization is currently working on?
Well, we have a lot of activities going on. We have been in existence since 1985, and our scope is U.S. policy towards the rest of the world since World War II. So we have been engaged in everything from nuclear nonproliferation, which is a very active subject and involves all kinds of countries around the world, including our own history with the Manhattan Project and so on. We have projects looking at the history of U.S. relations with China. I worked on a project that examined the Cold War in Central and Eastern Europe, different crises that took place, 56, 1953 in Germany, 68 in Czechoslovakia, the 80-81 solidarity crisis, and then final collapse of communism in 89, getting materials from all of the archives in the region, including the former Yugoslavia, and trying to put together a history that looks at all points of view, not just one country's perspective. So we have this kind of thing going on very actively in Latin America, for example, where we are able to make use of these declassified documents in an interesting way, which is to help the local countries and populations that have no chance of getting their own documents declassified, help them to understand what happened, because the United States was so well informed about the various repressions of on a human rights level that were taking place over the years. So there are many projects, many parts of the world, and many uses for these declassified records.
Zeitgeist je pripravil Matej Šebenik. Brala sem Sara, tehniciral Linč.
In ko pridem jaz nazaj, pa te samo ostane, imam tiste dolge hodnike, ne. Tam dol so vrata, pa tre vrata, ne. In jaz prijem tam, pa prem vrata, pa ne vidiš. Pa tam dol zagledam Madonna eno šo.
Res.
Je bil pa lep, mlad in to je siv. Siv, ne ta nemški očaj, ne, črn pa to ne. Prav tista prava volk. Krasen.
Radijske zgodbe o ljudih, ki ustvarjajo duh časa. Na Radiu Študent.